Where'd you find this?
Whoa, Craig's blue this week, not orange anymore? Or is maybe it's just my new computer?
I think so. I think you got upgraded.
Did I get that upgrade?
Usually blue screen is bad on computers, though, so gotta be a little cautious.
It's like, it's actually a nice blue, like a Jaguar blue, like a teal blue.
A winner's blue.
Oh, what a game last night. What a
That was an awesome game.
Yeah, the amount of discourse today of fuck Derek Carr or fuck Chris Olave on Reddit today was wild. Like, there was like no like, hey, maybe this offense is just bad. It was just like only these two camps.
Olave still had 57 yards, but it's people are getting to the point where he's gonna start to become touchdown dependent.
Yeah, well, that's what people were saying, is like he's giving up on routes. And I was like, well, when you're getting thrown the ball by Derek Carr in this offense where they're like, you know what, we're going to check the ball down to Alvin Kamara 97 times in a game. You know, he doesn't got to give every effort on every play, right?
He gave up on one route when the ball like almost hit the opposing team's fucking bench. Like,
and they're like, just because Derek Carr saw him quit, so he put the touch in. I was like, when has Derek Carr ever been known for touch?
No, Derek
Please
Carr had
to fuck up.
Yeah, Derek Carr, like, acting all mad. Why didn't you run all the way towards my ball that was, like, 20 yards and catchable? Like,
he definitely is, like, I know, like, we love him as, like, the mid-tier king, but he definitely is, like, performative.
Oh, yeah. He, when the Raiders were on Hard Knocks, I was convinced that his entire persona was built on trying to get his own reality show after he was done playing football.
He feels to me like a less insane Russ, and also like the freshman team version of the Watt family, right? Like, he's trying so hard to make JV.
He's the, if Russ is the Subway of NFL quarterbacks, he's the Quiznos. Derek Carr's got heavy Quiznos energy.
Damn. Hey, we like those subs.
I do like Quiznos. All right.
Is that why Quiznos went bankrupt?
Episode 103, TH Fantasy. We've already, even before the intro, we talked Quiznos.
Sandwich talk.
This is Sandwich Fest. This is a sandwich pod. We're glad you're here. Thanks for joining us, as usual. Let's kick it off with our go-to, and that's Ryan batting leadoff.
Sure. I did appreciate a good Quiznos sub. There's something about a freshly toasted sesame seed bun Italian sandwich. It was good, although I can't remember the last Quiznos that we had around here because they closed all around within the last 10 years probably.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about today about a football player, played for the Jets, had an unfortunate life. Let's talk about Dennis Byrd. All right.
Okay.
Born in Oklahoma, in a town to be named later. He went to Mustang High School in Mustang, Oklahoma. He was an all-state defensive end. Therefore, he went to the University of Tulsa and played for the Tulsa Golden Hurricanes. His career in college was 321 tackles and 20 quarterback sacks. Okay. And in his senior year alone, he had 108 tackles and 11 sacks.
God damn.
Let's go.
In the 89 NFL draft, the Jets chose him to be a part of their team, hoping that he could replace Mark Gastineau. He was a defensive backup in 89, still learning the position when they were in a 3-4 defense. He had 7 sacks that year. The next year, the Jets switched to a 4-3 defense, and they moved him to defensive tackle instead of end. He made 13 sacks in 1990 and 7 sacks in 91. And then his injury career season started 1992. He got a shoulder injury, was out for a month. But in November of 92, Byrd suffered a neck injury against the Kansas City Chiefs. The play, he was rushing an attempt to sack Chiefs quarterback Dave Craig. But Craig stepped up to avoid the tackle, and Byrd collided with his own teammate, Scott Mercereau. He ducked his head at the last moment before he collided with Mercereau's chest, and the headfirst collision broke his fifth cervical vertebrae and left him unable to walk.
Oh, God, no. Damn.
That's all right. He, during his recovery, he was able to regain how to learn to walk again after about a year. But obviously, he could never return to the game of football.
Sure.
After he regained about a year later, the ability to walk, which was, so this was September of the 93 season. He returned to the Jets opener, walking to midfield as an honorary captain for the coin toss.
Cool.
And during the halftime ceremony, the Jets president presented him with a trophy for the Most Inspirational Player Award, which is now named the Dennis Byrd Award.
Oh, cool.
His number is retired. That happened in 2012. It had been informally retired for a while because after his injury, the Jets never gave number 90 to another player. But it was officially retired in 2012.
Okay.
So after that, he spent several years traveling across the country, sharing his life story. He's been a defensive line coach at Owosso High School in Oklahoma. Also at another Christian school in Tulsa. That's where he lived with his four kids. Let's see. During the week leading up to the AFC divisional matchup in 2010-2011 between the Jets and the Patriots, Byrd sent the Jets, at then coach Jets, Rex Ryan, his tattered cut-up jersey that had been cut from his body on the day of his injury, with an inspirational letter addressed to the Jets. Ryan was so moved that he invited him to come out and personally address the team prior to the game. The inspired Jets carried his jersey to the coin toss, and they ended up winning the game 28-21.
Yep. They beat Brady.
Initially, that feels like a threat. You know what I mean? Like someone's like, hey, you got this tattered remains of this experience that was very traumatic. But they spread on a good way, so that's good. Maybe Aaron Rodgers will do that this year.
Ooh.
So not only did he have a horrible injury in, you know, 92 that prevented him from walking again until he made it through physical therapy, he was killed in a two vehicle collision in 2016 on Oklahoma State Highway 88. According to the patrol report, a 17-year-old driver from Claremore veered his Ford Explorer into the oncoming lane, colliding with Byrd's Hummer. He was only 50 years old. His 12-year-old son was actually in the car. I feel really bad for him because he lived through the experience and will have to deal with that the rest of his life. He was badly injured, but he survived. But his father unfortunately passed away. That is the sad life of Dennis Byrd, former Jets defensive lineman.
This is gonna sound uncouth, but stay with me here. It's got to be really fucking hard to die in a car accident when you are operating a Hummer.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Maybe don't give 17-year-olds like SUVs. Maybe put them in like Priuses or like Hyundai Sonatas.
It was on a state highway. Yeah, it was on a state highway, so I would imagine both parties were at least traveling 60 miles an hour or more when the guy veered into the other lane. So, you know, put that together, that's a 120-mile-an-hour collision. That's not many people are going to live through that.
I just don't, like, I don't think anyone under the age of 20 should be allowed to drive anything that's not a Toyota Corolla that's had six previous owners.
Like, because I'll tell you right now, from someone that's been in a horrible car accident, someone hitting you at 45, 50 miles an hour is, like, it's bad. Like,
it's life-changing.
I got knocked out. Like, all of a sudden you're doing something, bam, and then the next thing you remember waking up. It's so I don't even want to know what it was like, 120 mile an hour collision, geez, or more.
No kidding. Well, I'm gonna try to lift the spirits here. Unfortunately, this is spooky season, so I'm not gonna be successful. My 103 is going to be, instead of a guy or a Japanese baseball curse, I'm going to run through a couple of haunted sports venues and the stories behind them.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, right off the top, do we believe in ghosts?
Yes.
I most definitely believe in ghosts. I've seen them.
Okay.
I I think, like, obviously you don't see a fucking white sheet thing. But
well,
like,
yeah.
I think I believe in ghosts as a presence.
I don't see. I've seen like two in my life. I'm not sitting here trying to say that I see ghosts all the time. I'm not like that. But I've had some eerie experiences in an old house I used to live in, and it kind of creeped me out about that stuff.
I think that's my experience, right? Because I've only ever lived in like new house or like not really old land where like super terrible things happen. So I've been very like fortunate to like, there's not a lot of history here where you guys are like built upon history. So like,
yes,
the probability is much more higher, and I don't spend a lot of time on the East Coast. So
just for like a frame of reference, the last house outside of Tony's that I lived in after college was built in like 1919. And so it had a lot of history. So
yeah, your old house was spooky.
You probably fucking melted all those Victorian children's brains with all the sports you watched.
and it's ironic that you say that, because all three of the venues we're going to talk about today are in the Midwest.
That makes sense.
So first we're going to start. I want to point out that while in between our opening discussion and your tragic story, I did a quick Google search for the phrase haunted Quiznos.
Oh, for real?
And I found was a rapper by the name of Frosty, but the O's got the line through it, and they have a song called Haunted Quiznos.
What?
Thanks for the free, you know what, Frosty, you know what, the invoice is in the mail. So so let's start with our first haunted venue. We are going to talk about the campus of Notre Dame.
I didn't know Notre Dame was haunted.
Oh, bro, they're haunted by the Gipper.
It's, dude, it's Catholics. Of course it's fucking haunted.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
George Gipp was an All-American football player for the University of Notre Dame in the 1920s who died at the age of 25. So the legend is, so he died of strep, a combination of strep and pneumonia. But the unofficial legend is that after practice one night, he tried to get into a campus building to go to sleep, which makes no sense, but died from sleeping out in the cold, which is where he got the illness that would eventually take his life.
Well, what year did you say what year this was?
It was the early 20s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so shout out to Antibiotics. So on his deathbed, famously, he told Irish head coach Newt Rockne to go out there and win one for the Gipper.
I know that saying.
Yeah, and so they beat Army that week in like this huge upset. So according to campus legend, you can still hear the Gipper out there around the stadium, gipping, doing whatever that is.
We got to go to Bend, Indiana and find this out.
Yeah. What does it mean to gip?
I don't know. You got to pay a lot of money in tuition to find out.
Oh, that's true.
Scarily enough, he was portrayed by America's worst president, Ronald Reagan, in a movie from 1940.
Who has haunted us to this day.
Yeah, that's a specter right there. All right, let's move on. Ryan. Ryan will be into this. We are going to talk about the Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio.
What? I've been there.
I bet you have.
I saw Patrick Kane. It was the year after the Hawks traded Panarin to Columbus. So I got to see them two play against each other, as I have a buddy out in Columbus.
Yep. So did you know that the building where the Columbus Blue Jackets play is also the location of the former Ohio Penitentiary?
Ooh, that's,
oh, for
that's,
real?
That's bad.
Wait. Hang it's on. Like,
it's crazy because I'm thinking about it, because it's like right downtown to think that a prison was there.
So the Ohio Penitentiary is also the location of the deadliest prison fire in American history.
Oh, no.
In the year 1930, over 320 inmates died in the fire. That's a lot of people. Crap. And on top of that, since local police were so sure that this was a coordinated jailbreak attempt, police officers surrounded the building and shot anybody who tried to leave.
USA.
Oh my God.
USA.
Jesus.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So fans say that the parking garage, which is where the prison actually stood, can sometimes echo with the screams of prisoners.
Dude, that's got to be a nightmare experience. Holy shit. Oh my God.
Also, Nationwide Arena is the only place where a fan has been killed by a hockey puck accidentally shot into the crowd.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, now you do.
That's one more ghost at the stadium.
I'm saying. All right, so our last one is just one ghost, but it's a super interesting story, and it's in Memorial Stadium, a.k.a. The Rock, in Bloomington, Indiana, where Indiana University plays their football games.
Okay.
This one's a little true crime, so let's get ready. February 15th, 1960, construction crews showing up to work on the then almost completed Memorial Stadium found a body hanging from an 18-foot rope on the inside.
Holy shit.
The body belonged to 18-year-old Indiana student and Air Force cadet Michael Plume. The police show up, didn't take any evidence or survey the crime scene at all, and ruled it a suicide after less than a half hour of investigating. To this day, workers and fans report seeing the ghost in the stadium hanging from the rafters.
Oh my God, that's got to be eerie.
So, in the years that followed, eventual independent investigations would uncover a lot of shit about Michael Plume's death. There's evidence of foul play everywhere. Plume's shoes were clean. Despite for this to have happened, he would have had to walk through an active construction zone. His neck was not broken. Okay?
Oh, no.
And there was glove residue on the rope, and he was wearing gloves, but there were no rope fibers on his clothes or his gloves. There's a ton of theories about why this might have happened. So Plume spoke Russian, and he learned it in high school. And since this was the height of the Cold War, he was working as like a translator and interpreter with the Air Force. They thought maybe there was like some espionage in there. There's also a theory that he had witnessed a few cadets having gay sex. I don't want to like say like, yeah, it's cool that he was weird and homophobic, but like at the time you were kicked out of the military for being gay, but also you were kicked out of the military if you knew someone was gay and didn't snitch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was like a theory as to why he might've committed suicide. So aside from the mysterious circumstances surrounding his death, the story's noteworthy because of the efforts of Plume's father to find justice for his son. William Plume was devastated and absolutely refused to believe that he committed suicide. Almost all of the inconsistencies that I just mentioned came from his dad's relentless work to find out more information and details about his son's death. He pushed for a coroner's investigation, the one that determined that he didn't die of a broken neck, but actually asphyxiation. All of the stuff about no dirt on his shoes was stuff that his dad found out after using the then brand new Freedom of Information Act in the 1970s. This relentless motherfucker in 2006, at the age of 89, prepared his final 300-page report with independent investigators and presented it to the sitting coroner. It sat there until a new coroner was elected in 2017 and took a look at the report. So less than 1 month until William Plume's 100th birthday, his son's death was officially changed from suicide to undetermined.
Woohoo!
And so he knew that nobody like would ever be litigated against, but it made that much of a difference to him to clear the record to make sure that that was right. Not the official cause of death.
Well, yeah, when you have your quest of 60 years to do this shit, like just changing the narrative is like fucking life mission accomplished.
Right.
Right. So he fought the system until he got justice, and I think I speak for all of us when I say I got a ton of respect for that guy. I got a quote that I'd like to end with here. Here we go. I've learned one thing in 57 years. You can't fight City Hall, but you can outlive them.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
That's William Plume, and those are three haunted sports stadiums.
Awesome. Oh, sick. I like that one.
Fuck yeah. That's a fun one to do.
Yeah, let's turn this into like a Ghost Hunters podcast.
Instead of going to every baseball stadium, we just go to every haunted sports location in America.
Maybe that's like our thing now. Instead of remember a guy, we just find haunted places and talk to Zach Bagans.
How many people have died at facilities?
I mean, and also like if we could get Quiznos to throw some fucking venture capital money into that shit, like we'll kick back.
I don't think Quiznos is in existence anymore. I thought they all went under.
Hey, what is dead is may never die. All right, so someone will bring back Quiznos.
I guess someone could buy the brand. That's true. Yeah,
they're gonna resurrect that weird little ugly monkey thing and be like, "Hey, we love these subs." And everyone's gonna clap their hands on TikTok, and we'll be back.
Quiznos NFTs. Who says no?
2022.
All right, Shane, you got something new for us. Let's party.
I do. I know we haven't talked about Dynasty or prospects in a long time outside of like our episode 100 special. So I kind of wanted to trigger myself because we said last week that we are 1/3 of the way through the season. And I realized we haven't done like a check-in on the people that we spent all this time on. So now that we are 1/3 of the way, 1/3 of the way through the season, I want to do a little tap into basically the first two rounds of our rookie drafts for wide receivers. It's a little number fudgy because I know some sickos like Waleed drafted Jalin Hyatt in the second. So there are, we'll come back to this at a later point. Yeah. Every 1/3 of the season.
I do want to say before you go on that, like, we have been pretty modest, but we can't say we've been entirely modest because Ryan is still out of breath from his Sam Laporta victory laps.
I mean, we could do tight ends next week. It's fine. Hey, we were right about Tank Midsby, so it's fine.
Sure were.
All right, so for this exercise, I'm using RotoWire. I'm going to give each player a grade based upon the following on their website. They have these little bars for green, blue, and red. Green is 3 points, blue is 2 points, red is 1 point. These categories are air yards per game, air yards per snap, percent of team air yards, percent of team targets, average depth of target, catch rate, drop rate, average yards after the catch, percent target on route, average yards per route run. So I basically just took an average of everything, gave them a letter grade. So we'll kind of start just in order of not necessarily draft order, but kind of how people are performing and how we can have like a dialogue on each guy of what we see of what's going right, what needs to change for them to be better.
Sure.
So Addison, based on these metrics, got a B-. I know that we've said that he's being outsnapped by KJ Osborne as his biggest hindrance, which sucks. He actually has 80 less snaps than KJ Osborne. I get usage is important, and we'll talk about that with other guys, but as of right now, his yards after the catch is kind of dragging him down as he's only averaging 3.2 yards per catch. And I think we were pretty on the nose of our expectations of Addison, given his situation, especially with how bad Minnesota has been. I think we're seeing a good return of investment for a rookie wide receiver with Jordan Addison of being a flex play and a possible wide receiver too, depending on touchdowns. He does have a tougher schedule, so we might see a little bit of a downturn, but I still will be very patient with him going forward. Like, what do you guys think on Jordan Addison?
Ryan, how do you feel?
I like his performance so far, and I've been fortunate enough to have him in one redraft league, and he's been a starter at my flex position every week. Do we know the timetable for Jefferson at all?
No, it's up in the air. I mean, it says IR for 4 weeks, but some people are saying he might just not play the rest of the season. Just, they might do the Rams thing of like, we're not playing for anything. We can shut this down, but I don't know. It's going to get messy, so we'll see what happens. Tony, what do you think?
Do we think that Kirk Cousins is going to be the quarterback for the Vikings the rest of the year?
He said he's not waiving his trade clause.
Okay.
I mean, it makes sense. Just finish out your career. Or not your career, but finish out your time.
Well, and he's going to have to, like, if he went to another city, he would have to, like, register his Kohl's Rewards with a whole new store.
Right.
And that's...
I don't think those transfer. I think it's your zip code only based on your billing address.
Staying in Minnesota. So your mention of Jordan Addison's ADOT, I think, is super interesting because one of the things that stuck out to me when we were scouting is that in his last year at USC with Caleb Williams, half of his receptions were caught behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And for a dude that won the Biletnikoff Award the year before in Pitt as more of a vertical guy, I was always wondering, like, what Jordan Addison do we see in the pros? And I think you don't draft rookies for them to pop right away. And so, like, I still think Jordan Addison ends the year as the rookie with the most receiving yards. But he shouldn't be your wide receiver, too. He should be your flex.
Yeah. Correct. I mean, I think that's what a lot of these guys, our anticipation was. Like, at least in the beginning of the first half of the season, I'm like assuming I'll go on a JSN here right now, because I think he's going to have a really good playoff position and he's going to like spike in value as the season finishes, as long as he maintains his pace and he remains healthy. But as of right now, JSN has an F plus.
Wow.
He's the third lowest rated rookie right now, but there are caveats with this because we really didn't I don't want to say we didn't expect much from him, but like his situation is pretty tough, falling behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. His target share and his yards after catch have been pretty good in comparison to the rest of the NFL. What is holding him down is his A dot again, which is 3.8, but that is climbing, which will also bring in bring up the other three categories, such as average yards after the catch, percent target on route. So it's basically, we'll talk about this with Marvin Mims too, is these stats are all kind of interlinked. So if one goes up, one goes up, and law of averages and stuff like that. So he's also, I mean, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are kind of banged up right now. So we can potentially see an emergence of him taking over as Seattle is trying to fix what's going on with their red zone, because he is seeing red zone snaps. They do have a very good juicy playoff matchup where I think they face like bottom six teams in the last 3 weeks of weeks 15 to 18 or 15 to 17, depending on where your fantasy playoffs take place.
Sure.
So, I mean, he's kind of been on your bench or a bench hold as of right now, unless you have like a super deep league. Like I've had to start him in one league because I had three wide receivers, three flex. But I'm still very, very patient with him. He looks good out there. They're showing they want to use him. It's just, again, an average depth of target issue. But it was just climbing because I think his ADOT at the last game was like 9.6.
Sure.
He'll be better next year once Lockett or Metcalf are gone, outside of an injury to one of them too, where he could potentially see the rest, you know, have a good rest of the season. But
yeah. It's, well, he also broke his wrist in preseason too.
Right.
That's true.
I'm still a believer. I think it's JJ Zacharyson that keeps talking about how he's like almost double insured for injury, because there's two guys that if either of them goes down, he becomes the de facto like second man up, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, he's their main slot receiver right now, and I think he has like a 15% target share, which is like really good. You know what I mean? It's just the fact that they got to bump up where they're using him on the field. And it's tough too when like Kenneth Walker is just like running down teams' throats right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to have an excellent game against Arizona this week. So,
oh, for fair.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're looking at receiving yards on the year overall, JSN is at 110, which is under Noah Fant. He's only got like 56 more yards, 55 more yards than Jake Bobo. So,
yeah. Damn.
But Jax, he's only got 25 targets, so like, you know, you hope that if he can do an 8 to 9 target game that you'll see some crazy shit pop off.
Yeah, and he is built for that, you know what I mean? We comped him to Keenan Allen and Amon-Ra St. Brown. He doesn't have that breakaway speed, but like if you just give him the possession ball, like if you give him an 8 to 9 yard A dot, let him run for 22 yards, right? Like it's just big chunk volume plays. So
yeah,
I'm still holding. I'm not upset about him. It's just a patience game.
Yep.
The next guy who I do think is going to explode in value here shortly is Zay Flowers. He got a B+.
Yes.
Flowers has outsnapped the second wide receiver on the Ravens by over 140 snaps. He's that dude. He's lined up all over the field, split four ways between the slot outside left and outside right. He honestly, I think, would be ranked a lot higher if his A dot was higher, because he's currently at 8.2, but that number can drastically change, as we're seeing, because they're kind of not really using him more in the bubble screen area. They're kind of trying to spread him out across the field,
yep.
As opposed to putting up like the designed, like easy chunk plays.
Evidence in last week's London game that they just want to get him the rock. He got his first touchdown last week too.
Yeah. Outside of Puka and Tank, he's kind of the most consistent rookie right now, putting up points on your bench or putting up points on your team, not on your bench. I've started him every week where I have him. I'm not upset with what he's doing. It's kind of the same thing as Addison, of he's a flex play with potential touchdown upside. And I mean, the sky's the limit for him, because like, who's Bateman? Who is Devin Duvernay? Who's OJB going forward, right? Like, he's kind of the last man standing, and he's already showing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. I'm gonna get a little passionate here because I saw this shit live in person on Monday at the Charger game. But Quentin Johnston got an F. I saw it in person. QJ's got the juice, man. There was like three plays that, like, I'm sure the broadcast didn't show, or like they did show, but not with the full context. But like, QJ was just torching dudes. Like, it, like, there was multiple points where he was even with the DB, and I was like, if this play continued, he was just gone. Herbert just didn't look his way. It sucks when he's the fifth read, and it's going to take some patience going for this. And I think calling him a bust at this point is also stupid and wrong.
Yes.
I know that people do need opportunities that need to show up, but I also believe the fact that the Chargers FO is so fucking stupid that they're prioritizing the people of like Josh Palmer, Trey McKitty, someone named Stone, who like, I don't even understand what's happening here. And that it's more of an organizational issue, because they're putting all the pressure on Justin Herbert to be the carrier of this franchise and not giving him any outs, where he has to go with who he trusts. And as of someone right now, within week six, you can't trust the rookie right now, especially when he's being designed as a decoy or just the field stretcher.
Right.
And when he does come into the game, they're taking Gerald Everett out. So he's in a lot of 12 personnel, which is really stupid to me on the Chargers, especially like the way that our tight ends don't block. So my in conclusion is I'm still patient on QJ. I mean, if you want out, you can get out. I'm not too upset about it, but like, nuke the Chargers front office and just start over, because this shit's ridiculous. What do you guys think?
I dropped QJ in my big money league, the one I'm in with Ryan, my league of record, because I only had a 5-spot bench, and James Conner went down.
Yeah,
that's understandable.
In redraft, cut him. That's all you can do.
But like, honestly, man, like, he's a guy that when my heavy bye weeks are over, I even on a 5-spot bench, I don't mind holding him.
Because like, he just needs one blow up game, right? And then he's, everyone's gonna blow their fab on him.
Yeah, and they should, because he's still a good football player, and I don't want anyone on earth to be as good as I want Quentin Johnston to be as good as, because I want the Podfather to shut the fuck up. I hate the player profiler dudes are the fucking worst. And if you want to play a fun game, talk shit about them on Twitter and someone will snitch tag them instantly. Like, I said once, I'm like, this dude looks like the main character from Office Space, and he's telling you that Zach Charbonnet is not a top tier athlete. And like, I got a comment from someone that tagged all of the player profiler dudes. They're like, they provide good insight. And I'm like, you're a fucking snitch.
Hop off that dick, buddy. It'll be all
right.
Get
out. Get out.
All right. Speaking of getting back on that dick, I'm talking about Marvin Mims right now.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
He was the highest rated guy at A-. And that's not even a bias. That's just straight up like data that is being put in front of me.
Sure. And obviously you showed me like 15 minutes ago. It was crazy.
Granted, it is a smaller sample size, right? He only has 10 catches on 12 targets. So those numbers, some of those values will go down, but if we maintain the other averages, he's going to be lights out. So he only has a 7% team target share. The dude is being put behind Lil Jordan Humphrey and 110 snaps short of Jerry Jeudy. I get what they're trying to do. I really understand the fact that they're trying to pump up Jerry Jeudy's value to the market to basically try to trade him away. But it's at the detriment of their own team. I don't know, because I know it's, I actually do know what's going to happen. The Broncos are going to try to tank for Caleb in Sean Payton's genius plan, but it's going to be thwarted by how bad the Chargers organization is. And they're going to choke in a pivotal game where Marvin Mims is going to go 9 for 180 and 2, and it's going to take them out of the Caleb race.
Love it. Fuck them. I love Marvin Mims. I'm really disappointed that they traded up to draft him with their first pick to try to turn him into like the store brand version of DeSean Jackson. Like, yeah, this is right. this is a contested catch guy. This is a guy that wins with physicality at the line. This is a guy that can win at all three levels, and they're just like, run far.
Yeah, which you can do, but also, like, hey, I know you saw that cool-ass, like, 60-yard touchdown in Texas, but, like, he can do a lot more.
Sure can. You should probably try it. Try it out. Let's see how it looks. And like, just the refusal. The entire world is looking, every football fan is looking at this and saying, like, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
And, like, the quote that came out, too, of, like, Sean Payton's like, we're trying, like, all this shit. Everyone's like, dude, the data is right there. Like, I know analytics is, like, a meme in the old guard of coaching. Yeah, right, but, yeah. Like, Mike McDaniels is proving, like, if you just scheme things appropriately with the right personnel, you can do crazy shit. And it's just locking down these stupid old takes of, oh, he fumbled, so now he should be on punt return duty. What the fuck, man? Like, who cares?
Right.
All
right.
I'm over my Marvin. Sorry, I'm getting agitated. I'm more passionate about that than QJ. All right. So next guy, B+, Jaden Reed.
My guy.
The basic summation of this is Jordan Love sucks and his catch rate is like 50%. And I didn't look at the actual percentage rates of how many targets were actually catchable by Jaden Reed. But it's basically 50-50. The return of Christian Watson has hurt a little bit in his target share, as he's also sharing the slot role with Romeo Dubs and Dontavian Wicks. I don't know why on the latter, but I still think they should move him to the intermediate and he can produce. He's kind of a toss-up right now because we know what his ceiling can be, but there's just so many unknowns going forward with how open that offense is with the QB situation. And for me, as someone who drafted him in like the mid-second, I'm not mad about it. In redraft, he's kind of a whatever guy. Like, I'm sure he's on your waivers and he's just kind of sit there until he has a blow up game. So
he's also a guy that like everyone rostered for like 2 weeks and then dropped again.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I think Jaden Reed's a fucking dog. When Walker was on here, they were talking about Jaden Reed and they were right then and they're still right now. Like, Jaden Reed is going to be a legitimate player in this league for a long time, and I just don't think there's any way around it.
Go.
Ryan, how are you feeling?
I hope so, but, you know, I don't like watching Packers players too good, so.
I was going to say, that's a caveat.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
But yeah, Packers going to need a new quarterback in order for him to step out, I think.
Yeah. So, do you have any more guys? Because I have a question.
I have four more.
Okay. We'll wait till the end. Keep it going.
Okay. All right, cool. The next guy is Rashee Rice with a D. It honestly sounds a lot worse than it is, but it's just based on the situation. But we knew that going into this year, because we banged the table for Travis Kelce or bust for receiving options. The bright side, even though he is being outsnapped by MVS, Sky Moore, and Justin Watson, he is steadily proving to be the number two consistently on that team based on his snap increase, his target share, and his ADOT going week to week. He's not game breaking right now, but I do think he's like a safe flex play going forward with potential touchdown upside. Five targets a game from Mahomes is pretty sort of what you can expect from someone right now who should have been drafted in your round two of your rookie drafts. I'm not hating him right now. I think he's kind of a fine play. I think it sounds worse on paper than it is, but I feel like he's Nico Collins from last year, where like he's kind of skittish where you want to start him, but like he's very safe to give you 10 points every week.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I'm telling you right now, I'm really bummed that I couldn't find any strong or any valid like Rashee Rice bets on FanDuel this week, because I think this is a big Rashee Rice week coming up.
Sleeper had him at 35.5 over.
I'm in. I'm doing it right now.
I took that over. I don't know if the line moved up, but Chargers are going to get cooked this week. So I would bet at least the over on that, those amount of numbers. He looks good. I mean, like, we were not super impressed with him. Like, he just kind of felt like a juju type where I was like, yeah, he's fine. I'm not mad about it. Like, he's not game breaking, but like sometimes you do need depth play in Dynasty, right? Where like you need a weekly fill in or you need a flex play guy. So I'm not mad about it.
Maybe it just takes the second half of the season for this guy to emerge, because it seems like Kansas City just can't figure out what's going on with their wide receivers.
Well, they just brought back in Mecole Hardman, so it's like, I think they're actually figuring out like Sky Moore is bad and Kadarius Toney just are not it, and they're like, okay, we need to go back to like what is being used properly, and like who is MVS, right? Like Stonehands, like who cares? But yeah, I'm not upset about it. The next guy is Josh Downs. Again, another one where his grade is worse than it actually he is performing. So Josh Downs got a D plus, but his role, even prior to go with Anthony Richardson going down, Godspeed, get better, King. We just have more consistency with him going forward because the ball is going to him on an average of 7 targets per game with Minshew. And I don't really see why that's going to slow down because Minshew can't really like throw the ball well. So the slot receiver in the intermediate is like pretty much the easy way to do it. His target share is great. His yak and air yards increasing. So I'm pretty confident that Josh Downs is going to be a weekly starter going forward in the slot. Kind of like expediting the process of what we kind of anticipated JSN doing. I think he's a great return in your second round drafts, potentially your third round is where I got him, especially on someone I wasn't super high on the draft process on, but I think his opportunity share is very good right now, and I would, if you have the ability to do so, I would go buy Josh Downs.
Yeah, I love Josh Downs, man. He's a fucking great route runner, and I think what we're seeing this year with guys that are small but killing it is like, if you could run a fucking route, I don't care how tall you are.
Yeah. Ryan, you got any takes?
You Josh Downs guy?
I really am not. I just, from listening to you, Tony, I'm not confident in this Indy offense the rest of the year. So you guys can have, I might, you know what? If his lines are low enough, I'll take his over on like receptions. I think I saw it for this week was like 2.5. That seems like a smash.
They do play Cleveland, though. That's like the only caveat to that. But I mean, like, they're going to have to pass the ball. There's no way they're going to rush the ball against that defense.
Right. It seems like Tony's checking, but it seemed like it was pretty low when I looked earlier.
If it's 2.5, I'm putting money. Putting the fucking keys to my car.
Yeah, I don't want to bet the yardage or anything like that. But they're going to try and get him to rock. So.
Yeah. What's it at now, Tony?
Let's find out. Cause yeah, his yardage didn't hit, but his catches hit. It's not posted.
They're smart. They know what we're doing.
I thought I saw it earlier this morning, but
when it says Craig is listening to your conversations on Discord, it's because he's feeding your betting info directly in the FanDuel. Yeah.
Take that down. Take it down.
All right, my next guy is Jonathan Mingo, who was a raw prospect, and I'm not holding against him, but those drops kind of are killing his production, as he was seeing an average of 6.5 targets per game last week, and he's only catching about half of them. I am seeing on tape, I don't know what it is. I think he's kind of like trying to get him acclimated to the speed of the NFL, because he, for a bigger, beefier, faster guy, he's not really running through defense. He's kind of doing the Tyler Lockett thing where he's catching and going down. I mean, I don't blame him. You got to take care of yourself, right? But like when you're kind of built to take and run over linebackers as your frame, I kind of anticipate you to steamroll some dudes. He was drafted relatively highly in drafts around like the 201 to 204 range in your rookie drafts. And we're not seeing an immediate return on potentially that at this point, but I still think he is the heir apparent as the wide receiver one of the Panthers next year, unless they re-sign Thielen, which is a good possibility with like the production that's happening right now. Everyone else is like just going to be gone because Terrace Marshall wants to leave. And I'm like, dude, if you can't make it on this offense, I don't know what the fuck you're going to do.
Yeah. Where are you going where your skills are better appreciated than a room that's that
the Giants? Like that feels like it's the only place he can go to. Yeah. Yep. Any takes on Mingo? I feel like he's kind of a whatever guy at this point.
Yeah, I've got nothing on him.
He's another grower, man. Like, he's a guy that's going to need a year before we really have any idea if he's, you know, Debo Light or if he's Denzel Mims. You know what I mean? Like, I get the process pick. It makes sense to me. You want to pair a young guy with a young guy and see if they can build that chemistry. And I think right now, the fact that they threw him directly into the Lions' den right away with Bryce Young, like, it's going to take a while. And I love his usage. I love his routes. I'm going to spend some, maybe now that you've given us a few of these names, I'm going to try to look at some All-22 tonight and see what the fuck are we missing? Like, why isn't, I know that Thielen's killing it, but that should, in theory, open things up for the other guys in this offense, and that just hasn't
And I think yet. It's a skill gap thing. I think he's just not ready for the NFL quite yet, where Adam Thielen is like, what, 8 to 9 year veteran who just like knows how to cook defenses. And I mean, dude, Bryce Young looks crisp out there. Like I was not a Bryce guy, but like he looks good considering his circumstance. Like I think his playing is much better than his stat line shows. I mean, granted, it's obviously fantasy football. We expect it kind of like a Derek Carr output because he doesn't run the ball, but like his anticipation is good. He knows how to read defenses. His O-line just fucking sucks.
Yeah, they're terrible. They should use a first round pick. Never mind.
All right, next one. I'm sorry, Waleed, but I had to get this one in because we had to give you a little bit of a razz. Jalin Hyatt.
Oh, no.
A big old fat F.
Yep.
It's not good. His ADOT's decent, but for a team that does not throw the ball deep down the field with a horrendous O-line and a busted QB, there needs to be a lot that changes for Jalin Hyatt to be successful in the NFL and to at least have like fantasy relevancy.
Wait, hang on. He has an ADOT? He's gotten targeted this year?
He actually had 2 targets last game, but his ADOT was super low. I don't know why they're not using, Giants are a nuclear wasteland. I do not want to even like put my eyes on anymore. I didn't even watch the Monday night game or the Sunday night game because I was like, this is just going to be a misery experience. As of right now, I've packaged and sold my Jalin Hyatt shares. I mean, I can buy back in later when he's cheaper or someone cuts him, but I would probably put him in a package and trade him away at this point for someone who thinks he's a quote unquote buy low, or they want to take the lottery chance of like what can happen. I mean, I didn't lose much. I took him at like 304, which is like whatever. I could have had Puka, but my process didn't say that, so it is what it is. What do you guys think?
What did someone say in the 100 episode passive? It was Jalen Motel 6.
Yeah, that was Crisco. He's one of the things that made me fade Jalin Hyatt going into this year was a Brett Coleman Giants team preview where he's just showing open receivers running downfield and Daniel Jones choosing to check down over and over and over and over again. He's Jalin Hyatt, like, we don't even know what he is, and it's a third of the way through the season because they just won't throw deep.
Like, will they not throw deep, or can they not throw deep?
It's probably both. It's probably a mixture of both, but even last year when the line was better, Daniel Jones wasn't throwing deep.
R.I.P. Isaiah Hodgins.
So can I ask you guys real quick, of the 10 that we just listed, I want you to ponder your orbs and stare into the crystal ball of the future. Which one of these guys gets drafted highest in next year's redraft leagues? Jordan Addison, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, or Zay Flowers?
Most likely Addison. I guess it depends on the quarterback situation in Minnesota, but I'm saying Addison just because of the heavy run offense they have in Baltimore.
I think the way that it's going to happen is I think it's going to be like the Cam Akers situation, right? Where JSN, I mean, we had JSN the highest rated rookie wide receiver out of this class. I don't want to say it wasn't close, but there was a gap. But I think it's going to be a recency bias thing where if JSN hits like 2 touchdowns in week 16 and wins somebody their week, he's going to fly up to like the 4th round because people have that recency bias where, to me, I think situation, I might take, say, Flowers next year higher than both of these guys because he just seems to be the clear-cut guy with a younger quarterback with a scheme that's more favorable to him. But like Ryan said, I mean, things can be so much different, right? There could be no quarterback in Minnesota. There could be Tyler Lockett could be gone. DK Metcalf could be gone in Seattle. Like, we just don't know. But I would say Flowers is who I would take, but I think JSN, consensus.
Yeah, I'm going to go with JSN just because I want us to have enough diversity of opinions that next year we can brag about it as we do our team previews. Okay. So one of us is right.
All right, so that's my rookie preview. We'll tap back in at week 12 and we'll see where we're at.
Okay.
I love it. That was awesome. Also, I want to give a shout out to the player who's quickly becoming my favorite rookie wide receiver this year, and that's Michael Wilson for Arizona, who has been absolutely shredding zone defense left and right. Don't ask him to win in man coverage, but when it's zone defense, he's that dude. All right, so let's take a break. We are going to go and hit the lab, and when we come back, we'll have a super flex lineup for you, and we'll see you soon. And goodbye.
Please just stole my Cadillac, so I looked him in the eye. I asked him for the truth, and he told me a lie. Well, we said it in the middle, I'm too poor to die, but I seem to keep on moving.
This is a certified hood classic.
You really put your heart and soul into that one for it to be completely ruined. That was Ryan's, and we're back. presented to you by John Cage's 433. So we did our Superflex lineup. We're back, baby. Let's run through it real quick. We're pairing Matthew Stafford with Cooper Kupp. Pretty basic shit, right?
He's gonna have a great week.
I think Cup's overs this week are like 90.5. So like
it was like 91.5, I think, last time I looked. Yeah.
Fuck.
And guess what? Guess what? I've taken the over in multiple places. It doesn't matter.
Wouldn't surprise me if Wally's millionaire bet was Cooper Kupp's like adjusted alternate line of like 150 yards or something.
I mean, one of my top five bets of the week, spoiler alert, is Kupp over 100.
Oh shit.
So our second pairing is Lamar Jackson with a hint of Mark Andrews.
Just a little.
Yeah, this is a bad week for fantasy with everyone being on bye. And so I like the Lamar play because I think this is a week where a lot of people are going to try to pay down.
This matchup also seems kind of ugly, right? Like it feels it's going to be, again, another fucking Baltimore game where they're allergic to 21 points. But like you were saying in the intermission portion, that like this is probably the one week where like Lamar has the highest probability of any quarterback to score a rushing touchdown.
We are running backs, so we went Ken Walker, so I feel like that's going to be pretty chalky this week, and so we switched it up and we're going with Jaleel McLaughlin as our second running back, which is, I love this play because if this dude is a spark plug and he's already given you multiple 15 point weeks this season, if he does that for us and everyone else plays to where they should, we're looking good.
Green Bay running defense sucks too.
Yep. We have D-rated Rashi Rice as our second receiver, who I think is a great play. This is, like I said, I think this is a Rashi Rice blow-up week. And our flex is Josh Jacobs going against the Bears.
Oh, yeah.
We have Tyson Bagent and Brian Hoyer in Chicago on Sunday at high noon.
They should have put the game on Thursday.
This game should not exist. I'm treating this as a bye week. I'm just not watching.
Honestly, I hope for like these dudes are playing for a contract, right? Like they're hoping for next year. I want to see these dudes just go batshit insane. It ain't going to be pretty, but like I want to see 50 passing attempts from each guy.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm gonna tell you this,
and that will lead us into our next segment. Unless Tony has something to say.
Oh no, fuck it. Bring it on. Let's party. Right.
So my mid-tier kind of shitty tight end of the week. Guess who it is?
Of the week.
Michael Mayer.
Does he have a really, really, he's got a really good jawline, right?
Michael Mayer, all right. Coming out of nowhere last week, getting 5 receptions for 75 yards. Against the Bears offense or defense this week, Michael Mayer is going to have another good game, and he's going to get his first NFL touchdown.
Oh,
how does that make you feel as a tight end fan against your I don't want to say alma mater, but your home base? Does it feel bad?
Yeah, it does. Okay. he's only 4,900 this week, so that's why I'm picking him, because he's gonna be able to make lineups with some more respectable guys. And just the way he looked last week, I know it's a different quarterback this week, but shittier quarterback means shorter throws. I'm calling it right now. 5 catches again.
Were all of his targets under Jimmy G, or did they split?
I'm not sure.
He had a couple with Hoyer.
I mean, I'm going to say it does feel really good to like watch the prospect that we loved in the process just do the same shit in the NFL when I'm like, yeah, dude, it only took 6 weeks, but we're fucking here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It,
people buried him already. You know what I mean? Like, chill out, be cool. Like, there's 18 weeks in the season. Like, you've got time.
And it's not over yet. Don't push the envelope. It's okay.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I love the Mayer call. I think that's a great.
Yeah,
I think that's a great play.
Another guy you could pay down, 4,700. Kincaid feels like Kincaid week. But yeah,
would be his first.
Yep. But Michael Mayer, gonna do pretty well against the Bears this week. I got a feeling.
Okay. I like the idea of the Dalton Kincaid pay down. I also think Dalton Kincaid might be one of the lowest owned players in most TFS tourneys this week, because yeah. I think people are just feeling burnt.
It'll be unique, that's for sure. It'll probably be less than 1.5%, 1% owned. We'll see.
Yeah. So let's move on. Shane, tell us about your plays this week that you like.
So I got a hater parlay here where we start off. You should pair these together. Desmond Ridder. Over 0.5 interceptions. Last week we saw the collapse against a decent pass rush, and with even more pressure in his face, I think Ridder shits the bed yet again against a kind of a middling secondary. But the secondary of the Buccaneers do not allow for more than a QBR rating of over 75. So I feel like they're just going to kind of stack the box like they have been doing the whole season and just make him throw, and I'm anticipating him to not do well again. The next one is Mac Jones under 0.5 touchdowns. So so Mac Jones hasn't thrown a touchdown in 3 games against lesser or same quality defenses. I honestly think we're approaching maximum capacity probability of Mac Jones getting permanently benched, as they did sign their backup quarterback to a longer contract against a strong division rival who gives who is the third best against the quarterback position. They're not the best in the secondary. They have a better QBR under pressure, around like 85 QB rating. But this offense is so goddamn anemic. I don't know how Mac Jones is going to throw to anybody when, again, he doesn't have a quarterback that. Or not a receiver, because wasn't there like one attempt last week where it was Devonta Parker and like he just stone cold dropped it?
Yeah, that sounds like Devonta Parker. Yeah, I will say, I do want to point out the way you phrased that, and this might be a reference that only Shane and I's dorky asses are into, but like it just reminded me of, like, I thought you were going to say, like, this is the week that Mac Jones gets compromised to a permanent end, and it made me think of John Cena announcing the death of Osama bin Laden at that WWE pay-per-view years ago. Like, Bill Belichick's going to grab the mic and be like, Mac Jones has been compromised to a permanent end. Bailey Zappi.
And then Robert Kraft just has the drone strike behind him and just fucking nukes Bill Belichick from orbit. I don't know what's going on with that franchise. Like, and I don't think anybody feels bad, right? Like, you've had two decades of dominance, but this is what you deal with. Another one I was kind of on the fence about is Jared Goff under 252.5 passing yards. Baltimore is the third best against opposing quarterbacks and ninth best against opposing wide receivers. And Goff has not cracked over 250 yards in the last 3 games. So it's going to be very close. But again, with everything fantasy-wise, everything either feels chalk or it just feels gross. I bet the KW over of 76.5 yards. I bet the over of Rashi Rice over 35.5 yards. And I bet the over on Mark Andrews over 53.5 reception yards. Everything else, like, it just feels kind of so bleh. And it doesn't inspire me to spend money, aside from, like, the obvious plays like the Cooper Kupp over, like the Tyreek Hill over. But I'm trying to give you some non-mainstream takes.
Yeah, as soon as you told me that Sleeper had Rashi Rice receiving at 38.5, I took that and I paired it with Cooper Kupp over 91.5, and I'm like, here's $20. Yeah. Here you go.
And they've been really shitty lately too with betting, because usually they'll try to give a discount, but like the discounts they give now are like 5% off totals, and now you can only bet a maximum of $10 for a return. It's like, man, I want to gamble. but I can't in California. I have a very limited range of things, and now I'm like, here's my fucking dollar.
Right. Here's my dollar to get 250 back. You got to build that empire one dime at a time.
We are up, so I'm chilling.
That's great. In the Gamble Town, I went 0-5 last week.
Yeah, but last week was disgusting. Like, it was just an ugly week of football.
Yeah. This week's going to be just as bad.
I think I was 1-4. Maybe. No, I don't think it was 2-3. I think I was 1-4.
I do have a couple lines that I like on Sleeper that I'd like to point out. Curtis Samuel, over 34.5 receiving yards.
He's the wide receiver 2 now. Ooh. Since Jahan Dotson's now catching a field goal. He's the, what is that position called? The snapper?
Yeah, he's the holder. Yeah. And I like Jacoby Myers over at 48.5 receiving yards.
Okay.
Brian Hoyer loves him some Jacoby Myers. And Michael Wilson over 28.5 receiving yards. Can I just tell you, my Michael Wilson is free money against any defense that primarily plays zone. Did you know that that Michael Wilson is 19th in the league in fantasy points per route run versus zone?
Damn.
And it's so far you've been able to see it like clockwork. Man coverage, terrible. Zone coverage, 70 yards. So this is the Seahawks that are playing the second most zone in the league, and they have some of the worst coverage metrics as a defense. So I like those plays a lot. So now that we've poisoned your brain with gambling, Ryan, take us on a trip.
All right, boys, we're going to go on a trip this week.
Saddle up.
Yeah, literally saddle up, because we're going to where there's a lot of horses. All right.
Nice.
I kind of alluded to it earlier with the guy that I chose to profile this week. Tony, if we can get some country music maybe for this one.
Hit the country.
Let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. All right.
Ooh.
Timothy McVeigh type beat.
Did you know that Tulsa has more man-made lakes than any other city in the United States?
Just trying to drown their population.
No, the state of Oklahoma has a lot of reservoirs because a lot of the rivers that flow through there, and they just have a bunch of man-made lakes. Did you know that Tulsa actually started out as an oil town? And actually, in 1907, Oklahoma produced more oil than any other state and anywhere in the world.
Damn.
Yep.
Wow.
There was a bunch of geysers that were found in the early aughts in the late 1800s. And this was originally established as an oil town. Has a lot of Native American history, obviously, because we all know the Trail of Tears ended in what's now Oklahoma Territory, or what's now the state of Oklahoma.
Can I speak on that real quick? Because in second grade, they gave me a project where we had to learn about something like that. And the way the information was shaped to me as a 7-year-old was, it wasn't that far. And then as an adult, as I researched, I was like, wow, that was really fucked up to give that to a 7-year-old and be like, hey, not that bad.
Right? In fact, the Gilcrease Museum has the largest collection of art and artifacts from the American West and Native American culture.
Okay.
They have the Tulsa Oilers, who play in the ECHL, which is affiliated with the St. Louis Blues. They have a minor league hockey team. Did you know that a man named Clinton Riggs, a Tulsa police officer, invented the first ever yield sign? He invented the yield sign, and it's actually on his grave, like on his gravestone. They have a big yield sign.
I love the idea of someone looking at a stop sign and we're like, yes, but what if that's a little too much?
I'm not gonna tell you how to live your life. You choose to what you do.
Yeah, yield signs are just libertarian stop signs.
And here's another interesting fact. I don't know why this is. Maybe Tony can shed some light on it. But the University of Tulsa acquired the Bob Dylan archive in 2016. Why would a university do that? I mean, I get the monetary gains, but That just seemed really weird to me.
Probably because one of the grad students that worked there and was in charge of the disbursement was like, what if we just did this?
So the famous book, The Outsiders, was written by S.E. Hinton, and it was published in Tulsa when she was only 17 years old.
Wow. Fuck you. Stay gold, pony boy.
And an interesting fact to me and any other fishermen out there, in the 50s, the first ever sport fishing sonar was invented by Carl Lorenz and is today one of the leaders in GPS and marine electronics. The Lorenz company, I have a Lorenz fish finder, was invented out there.
I love that exists because someone's just so tired of just finding nothing all day long. Like, hey, how do I see underneath the water?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
They have a AA affiliate team, minor league baseball, for the Dodgers, the Tulsa Drillers. Famous players who played for the Tulsa Drillers: Matt Holliday, Sammy Sosa, R.A. Dickey, Pudge Rodriguez, Matt Teixeira. A lot of famous players have played for the Tulsa Drillers. Let's get into some famous people that are from Tulsa, Oklahoma. All right. We've got Frank Abagnale, as you all know, the famous Czech forger, famous movie by Spielberg, Catch Me If You Can, where Leonardo DiCaprio portrayed his life and is now an FBI informant for anyone, and still does stuff today with the FBI to help with Czech forgery.
Wow.
We've got, like I said earlier, S.E. Hinton, Outsiders author. One of Tony's favorite bands, the Gap Band, is from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I fucking love the Gap Band, all right? You dropped a bomb on me is one of the greatest, greatest funk songs ever written.
Hell yeah. We've got David T. Walker, a session guitarist for the Jackson 5 and Stevie Wonder. We've got one of the players that we put in our FanDuel lineup earlier. We've got Josh Jacobs, who's from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
It's all coming together.
We've got Dallas Keuchel, a pitcher for the White Sox. We've got Felix Jones, a former Dallas Cowboy running back. We've got Steve Largent from the Seahawks, who's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We've got famous basketball coach Tubby Smith, who did most of his coaching in the Oklahoma area. We've got John Starks, famous basketball player.
Boo! Fuck John Starks.
We've got the Lockett family. We've got Kevin Lockett and Tyler Lockett are both from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Tyler Lockett's father and himself. We've got Justice Hill, running back for the Ravens. Someone you guys will appreciate. We've got Bill Goldberg, NFL player and wrestler.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
One of the greatest Jewish wrestlers of all time, baby.
That's right. We've got Gary Busey, Mad Eyes Gary Busey.
Yes.
Famous actor from a bunch of films and crazy man nowadays.
I'm so sad he fried his brain, man. He was so good in movies, just being the wackadoo.
Right?
Yep.
This ties into an episode from a while ago, but Iron Eyes Cody from Ernest Goes to Camp, the Native
the
famous Italian that played Native Americans in films from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Iron Eyes Cody.
Jesus.
Who was actually Sicilian and not a shred of Native American, is from Tulsa. We've got Bill Hader, you know, actor, producer from SNL.
Yeah.
But the main reason that I chose this city this week, all right, because we've got the queen of Sunday night football is from the city, suburb of Tulsa, Oklahoma. We've got Mrs. Carrie Underwood.
Yeah.
Waiting all day. For Sunday night.
when Ryan and I lived together, we would always joke about that song. And like, even now to this day, if Katie and I are like hanging out and prepping dinner, whatever, lunch for the next week, she knows that it's time for solemn reflection while the Sunday night song is on.
you know, this is a country town, and you know, we all know that Carrie Underwood, after she gained fame from American Idol in the early aughts, she took over Faith Hill's Sunday Night Football job, and I think it was like 2013 or something like that. Just all around great singer. And it was it this year that they came out with the new version of the song, or was it last year?
They do a new version every year. It's slightly tweaked every year.
Oh, I also forgot to say that, you know, Garth Brooks is from this town as well. But
okay, no, you don't bury that lead, dude. I, even at my most, and Ryan could tell you, when I was in high school, I had fucking giant fucking Liberty Spike hair, looking like I walked out of like a Sex Pistols show. And even back then, I knew you couldn't fuck with Garth Brooks. All right?
Garth Brooks. What was his alter ego?
Chris Gaines.
Chris Gaines, that's right.
Ever since I was in high school, if you could ever play a video game, like a football game or a basketball game or a wrestling game, where you could create a character, my character's name has always been Chris Gaines.
Hell yeah. Garth Brooks.
Yeah, dude, Garth Brooks or Girth Brooks. Take it how you will.
So, yeah.
I have two quick things. One is a conspiracy theory, and that's that the Garth Brooks live album, Live in Central Park, and the other Garth Brooks live album, Live in Dublin, is actually the same exact recording.
Oh, shit. I gotta listen to that.
Yeah, and you're welcome, because you just get to listen to like 3 hours of Garth Brooks.
And it wasn't recorded in Central Park. It was recorded in, like, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Listen, man, he just goes where the thunder rolls. But I do want to say, like, the one person, because I saved a couple people, I'm like, oh, who I want to talk about. I just want to say one person, a musician from Tulsa that I wanted to give a shout out to, motherfucking St. Vincent.
Yeah, I saw that.
St. Vincent is one of the best guitarists on earth. It's not even a question. She's put out, I don't know if y'all listen to St. Vincent, but like, she did a collab album with David Byrne of the Talking Heads, and then her next album just sounded like a Talking Heads record, and it fucking ripped.
Hell yeah.
She also invented a guitar for people with boobs, so that it wouldn't be like incredibly uncomfortable to play, which I thought was pretty badass.
Hell yeah.
Rolling Stone this year just did the greatest guitarist of all time. She was named the 26th greatest guitarist of all time.
Damn.
She's that fucking good, man. She's like, I don't want to say Prince level, but she plays the guitar like Prince does.
Really?
Oh, dude. I got some St. Vincent songs you should probably listen to.
Send them my way.
And I also want to call back to an old podcast episode. I was on tour once in Tulsa. I played a show in Tulsa. And it was one of those things when you're on tour and you just like forget to eat, and then you go to the bar and they've got you like 3 drink tickets. So I was fucking smashed. And on the way to the house that we stayed in, we stopped for my one and only experience at Whataburger.
Run it back.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's Tulsa, huh?
Yeah, that's where famous Carrie Underwood is from. And, you know, the queen of soul for the NFL, you know?
Oh, I love that. Like, I wanted to say, like, the queen of soul, and then with, like, an asterisk, and then for the NFL.
Yeah.
All right, so that sounds like 103 to me. 104, we'll get together next week, and we'll shoot the shit and catch you up on what I'm sure was a god-awful week of games. And look forward to week 8, which is such a depressingly large number that I'm not thrilled
almost
about.
Almost
in
double digits.
Do we know if there's 6 teams on bye in week 8 as well? I hope not.
There's only a couple of big bye weeks. So hopefully next week will be a little bit more reasonable.
Yeah, hopefully it's only like 2 or 4 teams.
I'm going to leave you guys with a hot take, and then we're going to get the hell out of here. You ready?
What is it?
Giants win this week.
I took Giants in confidence pool. Yep.
There we go. Not that hot, I guess.
You guys are crazy for like wanting to watch that game, but I think it's a toss up, right?
Whoa. Let's not put the cart before
the
horse here.
That's the only game I'm watching.
yeah, don't watch the Charger game. It's going to be embarrassing.
I'm not watching the Bears, that's for sure. But I think Saquon's going to have an awesome game. So
I took the under on Kansas City, LA at 47.5.
Hold on. I had some notes about the Giants game earlier.
Bring it on.
Where was it?
Could it be that their losses, the teams that they've lost to, are a combined 21-8 this year? Like, no. The Giants looked bad, but they played the Dolphins, the Bills, the Cowboys, the Seahawks, and the 49ers. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Who's going to look good in those matchups?
So the Giants over the past five seasons are 9-22-1, with six of those wins against Washington. In the past six matchups, these teams have hit the under in 17 of 20 past meetings where the Giants hosted. So I like the under, but I do like Saquon going off in this game.
Okay. Let's party. All right. So for all of us here at the TH Fantasy Podcast Network, thanks for sticking around. Happy football.
Yeah. Peace. Happy week 7.
Let's go. Let's go. Brian Hoyer, Tyson Badgett.
Tank Bowl.
Yeah, it's bad. They're going to ruin Caleb.
Derek Carr.